welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for both local church and the workplace. I'm your host, Jonathan Allen. As always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
We're doing a couple of podcasts about the worship service.
Yeah.
We got one coming up about announcements in the worship service. That was big. We got this one about distractions regarding worship music. I got to say this at the beginning, Jonathan. I'm usually very appreciative of you and Amy Thompson and Amy Jordan, the team Rainer, that is doing the work, especially the two Amys behind the scene. You have a little more front scene than they do. But I also have to express my appreciation for Chuck Lawless. He is our Thursday writer of the blog post, and he's been with us, about a year?
I guess. I have to look that one up. Maybe 18 months or so. It's been a while. He's been doing it in just chugging light along.
And he's had some incredible posts. He's been a great addition to TomRainer.com. And we've been able to take some of the material that he's done from time to time and expand on it and expound on it in the podcast. And I love the fact that we can have a podcast that, we wrote 600 or 700 words. Now let's talk 20, 25 minutes about it. And that's what we're going to do today. And I'll let you introduce the topic.
Well, he wrote a post back in January on the 10 distractions regarding worship music. Now, I'd written something earlier in December about worship, and this is kind of a carryover into that, into the topic of distractions in worship music.
You know, anytime you talk about this topic, there is going to be all types of response. There's going to be a response and comments on the blog. I see it come through on social media and Twitter and Facebook in particular. And I tell you what, he wrote this 10 distractions regarding worship music, and it's as if there was this exposed nerve.
Oh, yeah.
And we took a surgical instrument and just touched it ever so much, and people started yelling, ouch.
Well, when
ouch.
It came in, I told you that this was going to be big.
I know, Jonathan. So, I know you're prescient on that. You had great foreknowledge.
Did you say I'm precious?
No, I did not say you're precious. I said you're prescient. That means you have knowledge. move on. I'll never call you
moving
prescient.
Moving on. All right, so number one, on the 10 distractions that Dr. Lawless mentioned, we got to get him on the podcast, by the way.
That'd be great.
We have not had. I don't know how we've been doing this for almost 2 years and haven't had him on the podcast.
That'd be great. Yeah.
So we'll have to do that. We'll have to fix that. All right, number one, incomprehensible choir or praise team words.
There are a lot of reasons behind that. It may be the choir.
It
may be the praise team. It may be the sound system. It may be drawn out lyrics. It may be enunciation problems. But for many reasons, they're saying, I don't understand a word that they're saying.
Well, a lot of times with unfamiliar songs, especially when choirs do them and you never heard them, okay.
And we'll talk about this a little bit more as we go through this. But we had Keith Getty on the podcast several podcasts ago, and Keith talked about the lack of congregational singing in worship services. And I even put that primarily because of the influence of the Getty as a trend for 2015 that we're going to see more clear congregational singing in both traditional, contemporary, whatever label the type of style of music that we put there. But it's going to be hard to have congregational singing if the lyrics are incomprehensible.
Yeah, you can't understand what they're singing.
So he put that as one of the, I don't know, did he put these in order of frequency, or did he just say, here are 10 of them, or
I think
whatever?
He just put them in, here are 10 of them.
Okay. So we don't know if this is number one.
He and the Lawless group have noticed when they've gone in and done church surveys. I mean, you've done this kind of stuff before as well.
And that's a good thing to mention. He has a consultation group called Lawless Group, and they do these surveys.
Yeah.
And this is not just anecdotal information for him. He's got all these surveys coming back from congregational surveys that he's done on the health of churches. Yeah. So he hears these things. And
this is not just a Twitter poll.
Yeah. I remember that comment from not too long ago. This is actually thousands and thousands of people who have responded through the surveys he's done.
And churches, I've noticed churches, we talked in this, we'll be talking about this later in the observations that you had about announcements, but the use of technology can help combat this one, especially the incomprehensible choir praise team words. It's just putting the lyrics on the screen as they sing them. Even if the choir is the only one singing, or the praise team's the only one singing, and you're doing your special music or whatever, have the music or have the lyrics up there on the screen. That solves this issue.
I see more and more churches doing this, even when it's a praise team only or choir or solo, where they put the lyrics on the screen and everybody's able to follow along. Yeah. And I think everybody likes that.
Number two, unsmiling faces leading worship. It's kind of hard to sing Victory in Jesus with a big frown.
Totally agree. You look up and you see the praise team, you see the choir, and they look like that they've just had some type of surgery, and it's just wearing off on them, and they have the pained look on this face. There's the opposite of that. There are these people who just look plastic, cheerful,
over the top.
Yeah, and they're grinning and smiling, and then they're pointing their hands out to you, and then they step down, and they've lost all their personality.
Yeah.
But this one in particular, singing is not just singing. It is your facial expression. It's your body language. It's your whole being involved. And there are a lot of unsmiling faces.
And that goes back to the authenticity in worship, being authentic, being that's what people want to see. You wrote a post in the past about that, about authenticity, the importance of authenticity in worship, especially with millennials.
Exactly. And that's a good point. That generation born between 1980 and 2000, they're the ones that are asking the question, is the pastor authentic in the preaching? Are the musicians authentic in their playing or singing? And this is where it can meet with disapproval.
Yeah, number three is one I think we've mentioned before on a podcast, and that's poor musicians or singers. Just the level of quality is not up.
And we understand fully that not every church has this large number of qualified singers.
Yeah, yeah. Not every church has Lee Greenwood sitting out in the thing either.
You're still making a big deal of that.
That's a big deal.
Well, God bless the USA. Yes. I love Lee Greenwood. But
for those of you who are listening and wondering what we're talking about, Lee Greenwood goes to Dr. Rainer's church, Brentwood Baptist, and Dr. Rainer preached there recently, and Lee tweeted him afterwards, and I got a kick out of that. So,
well, he came up and spoke to him. He's very nice.
Very, very awesome guy.
Brad Paisley goes there too.
Oh, okay. Name dropper.
Well, you started it. But he's never come up to me after the service and told me that I've done a great job.
That's because Mike didn't let you preach enough.
Well, he lets me preach plenty. I was in a church. Have I ever told you the story about being in a church of seven?
Yes.
And I told you
Merle.
I knew I had. I was just being facetious.
Oh, okay.
But you looked at me seriously. They cannot see your face on here. Like, yeah, where's your memory gone, Rainer? I was in a church of seven, and the number of qualified musicians that we had in the church was zero.
What? Nellie Joe was there.
Nellie Joe was head of the nursery.
Okay.
She couldn't come
to church
because she had to take care of our boys,
was
the only kids in church. So, yeah, Nellie Joe's a very good pianist. She could have added definitely to that. But we had no good singers. You know what I did? Almost every week I would bring a musician or a soloist, sometimes two or three to make it more of a praise group. But I would bring someone from the seminary. I was going to Southern Seminary in Louisville, traveling an hour to Madison, Indiana, and I'd bring them. I think you can find resources to improve the singing.
It's there, and especially where we live. I mean, we kind of joke about it with Brad Paisley and Lee Greenwood, but in Nashville, there's no reason in the world why you can't have quality music.
And I'm surprised that you haven't mentioned the fact that a certain female country singer...
She lives in New York.
She used to live here, and she used to go to church here.
She's not a country singer anymore, either.
Yeah, she's changed all the above.
Yeah, she went to Pete Wilson's place, I believe.
Yeah.
Who
are you talking about, Reba?
No. Taylor Swift. But Pete also has Natalie Grant, I know, has done some stuff for those guys over there. I mean, the resources in Nashville obviously are a little bit higher per capita.
It's an anomaly.
At the same time, I know people from wherever I've lived that have been phenomenal, and there are talented musicians around.
Absolutely.
I just got to get them to be a part of what you're doing.
And in Nashville, you can probably go to a Starbucks and get a great singer.
Yeah, the one that hands you your latte, probably.
Exactly.
Number four, unprepared singers.
That's
one thing to not have the talent level, but if you do and you just don't really prepare, that's a different one.
It's fascinating. There's a high expectation that the pastor comes to the pulpit with a well-prepared sermon.
Yes.
Not be the case, but there is the expectation. Worship is more than just a sermon. Worship is the totality of how we glorify God during that corporate time together, and that includes music.
Yes.
And so we don't want unprepared sermons, we do not want unprepared singers. So he nailed it on that one.
Dr. Lawless in here listed a quote, the "Please pray for me before I sing today because I didn't really have time to get ready for singing."
I love that one.
I'm just like, would the pastor, it kind of goes back to what you're talking about, the pastor. Would he get up and go, "Hey, y'all, sorry, this is going to be a kind of a crazy sermon. You know, I was out playing golf this week." I mean, he wouldn't do that.
No, even if he did that, he would not do that.
He puts the work in, hopefully. And you kind of expect the same out of your singers, out of your music group. And I know the churches that I've been to and been in, they are usually there at 6:30 in the morning.
Oh yeah, there's some very dedicated singers,
like, extremely dedicated, extremely hardworking. They get it done, and thank you for doing that. And I know we have a lot of music ministers that are out there. They're going, you have no idea how much preparation I put during the week.
Absolutely,
and we don't, and we thank you for that.
That's right. There's a whole lot that goes into this, and the reality is there's probably a lot more good than there is bad. But this particular podcast about some of these distractions.
Number five, and this is where I would camp out, is that preachy music directors.
Well, Jonathan, what's your problem there?
What, more singing, less talking?
Yeah, I've seen.
The preacher does the preaching, the music guy leads the music. Done.
I guess that there would be somewhat of a distraction if during the sermon the preacher started singing frequently. It can happen from time to time, understand that, but if it was a regular occasion.
If it was you.
If it was me, I would step down immediately because the audience would have their hands over their ears.
Yes.
But I know this is a sore spot for many people where 2 or 3 minutes are taken preaching a little bit before introducing the music. Yeah.
And we've seen it where we've gone, hey, I won't list any names or anything, but we'll go somewhere and you'll be speaking and the music guy will be up there and he'll just sit and vamp at the keyboard for 5 minutes while he talks. And I'm just going, what, you know, we're all standing around looking at each other. You know, it's good stuff that he's saying, but is this the time and place?
Well said.
Number six, songs disconnected from the sermon topic.
Well, when we talk about the worship experience, we're talking about the totality of corporate worship, from the time of prayer to the time of whether it is a choir or a praise group singing, to the solos, to the offertory, and I just go down the entire corporate experience, and it should be tied together. You are not putting disparate parts together and hoping that somehow it fits. Yeah. You're bringing people together for a purpose, and that should be a dedicated purpose, that should be a clear purpose. And so if the preacher is coming to the pulpit and the music that has been sung has absolutely no tie-in to the message, there's no sense of we've put all this together for a purpose. And so, songs disconnected from the sermon topic. And, you know, here's the question, Jonathan. What if a pastor on Saturday night, say that pastor's already prepared the message back on Tuesday or Wednesday, but just feels convicted of God that it's just not going to work and does a new message, and obviously it's not going to be tied to the music. What happens there?
Well, if he feels convicted of God that that's going to happen and that's how God has laid that on his heart, then
God will work it out.
I trust that God will, in his sovereignty, work out the music and how that ties into the message.
That is a great answer, and I think you're exactly right. The other part I would say is I hope that would be the exception rather than the rule, and that most of the time there would be clear planning.
Yeah.
Now, that puts some of the onus of the responsibility on the pastor.
Yeah. In my opinion, the pastor and the music guy should at least meet weekly or biweekly to talk about upcoming sermon topics.
Here's where I'm going with this. Some of the great worship leaders that with whom I've been associated, whether they are in a church where I'm serving as pastor or a place where I'm speaking, they're connecting with me by email saying, tell me where you're going with this, tell me what you're planning, and they tie it in so well. You know, brag on Mike Harlan, who heads up our worship and music area at Lifeway. He does an incredible job of, even if it's a Lifeway chapel or a place where he's leading worship, of tying things together. And there are a lot of them that are out there. We're whining right now about some of the things we don't like, but like you did before this, let's give the accolades where the accolades are due for those who have done well on tying this to the sermon topic.
Yeah, and I also think this is something, this is kind of unrelated, but if you're an expositional preacher and you're moving through one text a week at a time, the worship leader knows where you're going, and he can kind of see that. And that's one of the things I think also that really is another benefit of expository preaching, and instead of a topical thing where you're jumping around week to week to week.
Sure.
So,
as you well know, and we don't need to get off on preaching too much, but I am a believer in expositional or expository preaching.
Yeah.
Because I think that you can do more of a teaching with the totality of Scripture than an isolated passage. But I also say I've done topical sermons mm-hmm. before. I've done thematic. I've done doctrinal. I've even done some narrative sermons before. But, yeah, I like expositional preaching.
This brings up another question real quick. Now, you preach at a lot of different places in, like, one-time kind of environments. You know, you come in, you preach, and you move on to the next place. And there's a lot of evangelists that do this as well. What about tying in the sermon topics for the guest preacher? Is that something that should be considered, or is that something that should be, you know, we'll just worry about it when our pastors
I think pulpit? It should be considered, and it should be considered both ways. For example, when I get a request to speak, one of the questions that Amy Jordan asks is, what is the theme? What is the topic? Mm-hmm. And many times I will be able to do my sermon to their yeah. theme. When I preach in a local church, I got to say, rarely do they call or ask what my topic is going okay. to be. If we ask them, they most of the time they will just say
whatever he wants.
Whatever he wants, you know. But I prefer some type of direction, yeah, it always so helps. I can make a contribution to the church.
Any funny stories from the past about this, where you've gotten up to preach and the music before it totally disconnected or totally connected?
No, I mean the answer to your question is yes. In fact, it happened recently. And not going to give the church, but I thought because of the nature of the event where I was preaching on Sunday, I knew where we were headed. And then two things happened. Someone spoke. It was the anniversary occasion of the church, and then they had music. There was nothing wrong with the music, but it was not anything like I thought it would have been for the occasion. I changed my sermon.
Oh.
Now, I had the advantage yeah. of doing that because I could preach something that I have preached before.
Mm-hmm.
But I shifted my sermon
to make it fit.
To make it fit, because what I thought, it was not their fault, let me be clear, but what I thought would happen did not happen.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's not funny. That's just a story.
Oh, just a story. But, you know, I've been with you, and I know how easy it is for you to switch your sermon like that. So that,
well, because I have the advantage, I can yeah. use sermons yeah. I've
got the big
past.
Data bank behind yeah. you. Number 7, difficult songs to sing.
Yeah. Every song is difficult for me to sing because I cannot sing. But I understand what you're saying here. Chuck Lawless called it the singability factor.
Yeah.
There are some songs that you start, the music leader, the worship leader starts leading, or the praise team, or the choir, and everybody just joins in.
You know,
you can just tell that's mm-hmm. it's a song that is familiar, it's a song that is easy to sing. And then there's some other times like it's, no, we can't do that. And yeah. maybe that ought to be limited to the choir or the praise team
yeah.
doing those songs.
And I know Chris Tomlin from some corners gets a lot of grief about his songs, but the singability of his songs, I think, are what makes him the premier worship producer,
artist.
A worship artist of our generation. There's no doubt about it that you can almost hear 3 or 4 notes of one of his songs. You know exactly what it is. At times they may seem predictable, but I think he does that on purpose to increase the singability, and it works. I mean, the top 25 songs that are sung in churches, somewhere in the range of 9 to 10 or 12 of those are Chris Tomlin songs.
That says a lot.
He's doing it well because the songs are singable. The songs have, you know, simple messages that people can understand and lyrics that they can sing, and they're written in, you know, patterns and formats of things that are easily sing. And I think that also goes back to what we talked about with Keith Getty about congregational singing. If congregations can't figure out where the song is going and how the melody flows, they're not going to be able to sing. But if the singability is high and it's easy for them to understand where it's going, like a song like In Christ Alone,
yeah,
it's easy for them to sing along with.
It's familiarity, and it's an easy type of which. And this is a good segue to number 8.
Yes, the weak use of media for lyrics.
Chuck Lawless's insights are absolutely amazing. I don't think I would have thought about this, but he's right. Almost all the time, you're not going to have the music accompanied with the lyrics on the screen like you would in a hymnal.
Yeah.
It's just going to be
the lyrics.
And sometimes it's kind of difficult to know where, if it's not a familiar song, where I stop singing, where I start, and mm-hmm. where the emphasis is, unless you have it broken down in a part that reflects the actual singing
yeah.
of it. And sometimes the media just does not do well on that. I guess one of my pet peeves is watching the words go on the screen, and then the worship team or the worship leader is leading, and the next lyrics haven't come up.
You're oh, yeah.
waiting for them to
You're like, I don't know
come
what
up.
To say.
I don't know what to say, but I'll hum very well on these.
Number nine is a poorly done blended style. Now, just real quick, blended, explain that for people who may not be familiar with that term.
Oh, well, the reason they're not familiar with it is because it does not have a good definition. Mm-hmm. Blended by its simplistic form means some traditional, some contemporary, but then traditional and contemporary are elusive terms in of themselves. So blended is a combination of the two, and sometimes church leaders, worship leaders, pastors trying to appease to everyone will have songs that are highly traditional or then maybe really, really rock beat type of contemporary songs, and it just does not go well together. So it's a poorly done blended style.
Or they try. Sometimes what I've seen that really shows up here is whenever you try to do a really, like you talked about, the rock beat type praise chorus in a traditional style, and it kills the whole song, and it just doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
And I've seen that done especially a lot of times with taking, you know, modern praise courses and trying to do them in choir arrangement. It just doesn't seem to work.
A lot of this depends on the worship leader as well. Some worship leaders are more gifted in leading in certain types of music, and that doesn't mean they don't venture out from time to time, but they should focus on their strength.
And number 10 is something I think we've probably all experienced, is whenever they introduce a new song without teaching it.
Yeah, if you just put it up there and we're supposed to start singing.
Especially if it's not a praise chorus or a familiar hymn or something that people may know.
That's right.
You know, from the radio or things like that.
And so there's going to be these blank stares, and people are going to try to, we'll be moving our lips so we're not embarrassed that someone doesn't think we know that song, but it will be awkward. Introduce it. Let the choir sing it for a while. Yeah. Let the praise team sing it for a while. Let the soloist sing it for a while, and then bring them in. Teach it to us.
Yeah, I've seen that done really well at some of the churches we've been at, where the choir would sing the song as a special, maybe 2 weeks in a row, 3 weeks in a row. People start hearing it, start knowing it, and then by the time they have the congregation join in, everybody kind of familiar with it, they know it, and they move on.
Very well said. Very well said.
So, Chuck, thank you for those. Anything we'd like to add on this one?
The addition is there's this underlying sentiment right now, underlying discussion going on about worship services, and I think what we're doing is we're raising some of the issues that have been pushed down to the surface, and we're not trying to be controversial. No. We're just trying to get this out in the open, and this one about the singing is one of those.
Yeah, and one point that the commenters made, I remember, was that the post by Jordan Richmond that he had written, I guess that was back in 2012, about the volume, or 2013, volume of the service.
Yeah.
How loud should worship
music be? Still
getting
comments on that.
Oh, man.
We'll be at it 2 years later, and there's still comments. Yeah.
But that's one that the people in the comments brought up, is that if it's too loud, I can't pay attention because my ears are hurting.
There you go. By the way, Jordan is one of the worship leaders at Idlewild Church in Tampa.
Mm-hmm. Ken Witten, pastor there. And
great church.
Southwest Florida.
Yeah, Southwest Florida.
This week's podcast is brought to you by the Autopsy of a Deceased Church. Whether your church is vibrant or dying, Autopsy of a Deceased Church will walk you through the radical path necessary to keep your church alive to the glory of God and the advancement of Christ's kingdom. Find out more at tomreader.com/autopsy.
And please understand, understand that the sponsorship is not connected necessarily to the topic of the day. So if we're talking about if we're talking about autopsy and we're talking about singing, it just may so happen that Autopsy is a sponsor and it is not necessarily picked for this topic. It's always a hot topic, and it may not be one of the most theologically rich topics, but it's something that people want to discuss, and we'll continue to bring those to the surface.
Thanks again for joining us this week on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomreader.com.